from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh's attorney, the distinguished defense lawyer Roy Black. I wonder if Rush is still for tort reform, because those attorneys have to make their money, not always on the defense. Anyway, he has attacked the prosecutors in Palm Beach County, but he's also defended people who take OxyContin. This nation is full of people who take medication every day and will do so for the rest of their lives, said Black. He said also that the quantity of OxyContin Limbaugh is accused of ingesting 1,800 pills in 210 days works out to only roughly 8.5 pills a day, according to Black. According to Dr. Black, certainly not an outrageous amount. So I say, let's all tank up. Let's all get on Rush's wavelength. What do you say? Okay, speaking of wavelengths, this week's most newsworthy comment was this by the former head of the Iraq Survey Group. This is the guy last, if you check, go back and check, not that you're going to, that's why I invite you to. No, it's true. If you go back and check like last July, August, September, whenever the question of weapons of mass destruction was raised with administration officials, their answer was always the same. Just wait till Dr. David Kaye makes his report, will you? I think you're going to be in for some surprises. Yes, indeed. Here was his report. Boiled down this week.
My view was that the best evidence that I'd seen was that Iraq indeed had weapons of mass destruction. I would also point out that many governments that chose not to support this war, certainly the French President Chirac, as I recall, in April of last year, referred to Iraq's possession of WMD. The German, certainly the intelligence service, believed that there were WMD. It turns out we were all wrong, probably, in my judgment. And that is most disturbing.
It's surprising and disturbing. However, we weren't all wrong. A BBC staff member has confirmed that Richard Dearlove, head of the Secret Intelligence Service known as MI6, had played down the threat posed by Iraq's potential access to weapons of mass destruction last April in a lunch with two BBC journalists. Said it's not what you might think it is. Senior American officials had concluded at the beginning of last May that there were no weapons of mass destruction, according to the British newspaper The Observer. Intelligence sources, policymakers, and weapons inspectors familiar with the details of the hunt for WMD, told the paper it was widely known that Iraq had none within 3 weeks of Baghdad falling. So we weren't all wrong. Were we all wrong? We had enough evidence at the beginning of May to start asking, where did we go wrong? Said a senior U.S. intelligence official serving during the war against Iraq with an intimate knowledge of the search, talking to The Observer. We'd already made the judgment that something very wrong had happened in May, and our confidence was shaken to its foundations. I think that's deep. I don't know. I'm in an earthquake country. We don't have foundations here, but I think that means deep. The source, a career intelligence official who spoke on condition of anonymity, was scathing about the massive scale of the failure of intelligence over Iraq, both in the U.S. and its foreign allies, alleging that the intelligence community had effectively suppressed dissenting views and intelligence. David Albright, a former UN nuclear inspector with close contacts in both the world of weapons inspection and intelligence, told somebody last week, somebody who quoted him, it was known in May that no one was going to find large stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons. The only people who did not know that fact was the public. You can quibble with his grammar. Hey, surprises are neat. Hello, welcome to the show.
what they've got, with an attitude that's fit for hell to rot. Who's gonna take the way? Destination seems their fate. They're clocking, time's ticking, you're late.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show where safety is our primary concern. Unlike, let's say, security guards at a Tennessee nuclear weapons plant, they repelled 4 simulated terrorist attacks, but they were tipped off in advance, according to the Associated Press and the Energy Department's watchdog office. The surprising successes last summer by guards at the Y-12 nuclear weapons plant in Oak Ridge spurred an internal investigation that determined at least two guards had been allowed to look at computer simulations a day before the attacks. Energy's Inspector General declared the exercises tainted and unreliable. The mock attacks cost as much as $85,000 each to stage. A spokesman for Wacken Hut, which employs the guards, did not comment. But that's not all. Security is our only... safety, ladies and gentlemen, is job one. Security guards at the nation's leading nuclear storehouse have been cheating during anti-terrorism drills for perhaps as long as 20 years. Watchdogs in Congress and beyond are questioning whether the tons of enriched uranium at the Oak Ridge complex are really safe at all. First off, heads should roll, said a Republican Congressman Christopher Shays. I can assure you my committee will be following up in a very direct way. Y-12 at Oak Ridge is America's main facility for processing enriched uranium. When a team of Y-12 rent-a-cops racked up a perfect score, officials there were shocked. Guards cheated. Don't tell the head of North Korea. He'll try to take us to the IAEA. And the U.S. government fumbled repeated opportunities to stop many of the men responsible for the 9/11 attacks from entering the country, including missing fraudulent passports and other warning signs that should have attracted greater scrutiny. It's according to a preliminary report released this week. Did you hear about it? The new findings by the Independent Commission investigating the terrorist strike stand in marked contrast to the contention of many senior U.S. officials who for more than 2 years have portrayed the 19 hijackers as law-abiding travelers who did little to attract government suspicion and who entered or resided in the country legally. This week's report disclosed as many as 8 of the hijackers carried passports that showed evidence of fraudulent manipulation. As many as 5 of the passports had suspicious indicators. The report did not identify the details missed by the authorities. Occupation hijacker would be one of them. They don't list your occupation on the passport. The report also found that at least 6 hijackers, including Mohammed Atta, violated U.S. immigration laws either while in the United States or while returning. 5 of the hijackers aroused enough suspicion they were questioned individually by customs or immigration inspectors, but they were eventually allowed to get in. None of the hijackers filled out his visa application correctly. 3 clearly lied on the forms. There were many opportunities to stop the plot, said Commission member Jamie Gorelick, a former Clinton Justice Department official. But several current and former government officials disputed such assertions. I don't believe that in a visa interview you would ever uncover a terrorist, said Mary Ryan. Well, then why have a visa interview? What are you trying to stop? People from coming in and getting jobs as grips in the industry? What would be... Commission investigators identified 5 suspected Al-Qaeda associates by name who they believe may have intended to join the plot but were thwarted. That would be a success. 4 were blocked from obtaining visas in a variety of ways by U.S. consular officials abroad. A 5th was sent back to the Middle East by an observant immigration inspector in Orlando. He has, of course, been fired. No, he hasn't. No. Didn't happen. Jose Melendez Perez, remembered he interviewed a Saudi national, Mohammed El Khatani. Maybe he was the 20th hijacker. He had no return ticket, no hotel reservations. He refused to identify the friend who was going to provide him with money and other assistance on his trip. The bottom line was he gave me the creeps, Melendez Perez said, adding that he was a hitman, the guy that he was interviewing, because of his hostile and arrogant attitude and his refusal to disclose his plans. Before departing, Al-Qahtani turned to Melendez Perez, the inspector, and said in English, "I'll be back." No evidence if he said it with an Austrian accent. But we're continuing to check. Don't thank me. That's just, what we do around here. And by we, I mean me. Ladies and gentlemen, some good news for those of you who keep saying, Harry, hey, Harry, we love the fact that the broadcast is on the Internet, but we hate that software. Is there any way we can download the show and take it with us in our pods or in our other MP3 players? Ladies and gentlemen, the good news is, yes, starting very soon, the show is available at audible.com, which is a download service, and I believe it'll be free. And you can, yes, you can thank me. And by the way, word to the wise, and again, this is not a plug. These people don't owe me anything. I don't owe them anything, except I use their website. If you've ever had the situation where your local station has preempted the broadcast or the station that you usually listen to on the Internet, and you'd like to find another station on the Internet that carries the show on that day, a wonderful website called publicradiofan.com lists every show on every public radio station that's available on the Internet. All the time. You can just go there and name your favorite show, you know, Car Talk even, and they'll tell you when it's on, and we'll link you to it. But anyway, so that's word of the wise, Department. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Army has decided that small-town reserve units across America can, in fact, be allowed to fit homemade armor plating to their Hummers before heading to Iraq. Yes, we've had stories about the British troops getting the Iraqi soldiers' boots and other equipment because they didn't have good enough equipment of their own. And now it appears that U.S. troops aren't that much better equipped. Army chiefs prompted outrage, U.S. Army, this is, when they ordered a number of reserve units to remove steel plating bolted to the vehicles as they prepared to ship out. The top brass says it was untested and unapproved. The armor plating has been designed to fit over the thin metal floorboards, those have been approved, and canvas doors, those have been tested, of the existing Hummers. Hummers are what we buy. It was fitted, armor plating was fitted by troops and their families with the help of local businessmen and town councils, friendly mechanics, and high school engineering students. The Army has increased production of armored Humvees and bolt-on armor kits, but the approved kits, which cost about $50,000 each, will not be sent to all units before next summer. Not this summer, next summer. We're supposed to be out of there by then, but the kits will arrive. Does that sound like the Army? Warriors of the 428th Transportation Company of the Army Reserve in Jefferson City, Missouri. Hey, there's a presidential primary coming up in Missouri. They were not prepared to wait that long when just days were there before they were due to deploy to Iraq. They heard that the Humvees were vulnerable to roadside bombs. Virgil Kirkweg, whose sheet metal factory built armor for 50 vehicles from the unit, said some military police friends of theirs said they were being hit by roadside bombs. People were losing arms and legs or getting killed. Kirkweg's son-in-law, who's serving in Iraq, sent pictures of crude armor his unit had tried to make in the field. His armor costs less than $500 per vehicle and takes 3 days to make, as opposed to the $50,000 and a year and a half. We're not saying it's picture perfect, but it's substantially better than going out with nothing, Kirkweg said. He tested the steel plating by shooting at it with a hunting rifle. Major Gary Tallman, a spokesman for Army weaponry at the Pentagon, said the commanders had never actually banned improvised armor, but said a perception got out that the answer was no. We've now sent out a formal message saying if you're going to do this, here's how to do it right. Army officials say the hometown effort is understandable given the ongoing American casualties, but says Army Deputy Chief of Staff John Keane in Congress a while back, quote, to be honest with you, we just did not expect this level of violence, explaining why the Army is short on armored Humvees. So I guess they were all wrong, too. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to opine here for just a moment. I'm not going to go all Dennis Miller on you or anything, but if you read really carefully all of the quotes from U.S. and British officials in the run-up to the war. They never said, Donald Rumsfeld said last March, we know where all the weapons are. But aside from that, what they usually said was, he had weapons of mass destruction at one time. Now, we know that because he used them. Of course, at that time, he was a friend of ours, and we blunted any criticism of his use of those weapons. But we knew he had them at that time, of course, because some of our companies helped sell him the precursors for them. So, of course, we knew he had them. And he clearly, indubitably, did not cooperate with the United Nations in proving that he'd gotten rid of them. So what happened then was an act of, not of intelligence, but of extrapolation. He had them then, he didn't prove he doesn't have them now, so therefore he has them. We didn't have any real intelligence that said, I know he has them. What we had was Ahmed Shalabi, who was the chief exiled Iraqi that had the ear of the Pentagon, saying, I bet you he has them. Of course, Shalabi is now in the Iraqi Governing Council, so he had a little something to gain from the deal. But it was extrapolation, not intelligence. And despite the fact that David Kay says this week that all the intelligence analysts he spoke to said they were never, never, ever, ever pressured by the political class to harden up their assessments. The Hutton report, which is widely reported in this country as having given Tony Blair's government a clean bill of health with regard to allegations that it sexed up its dossier claiming that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction a year and a half ago. Even the Hutton report did have this little kind of slud in moment where Lord Hutton said that, the British government, the politicians, did, in fact, express a desire for the strongest possible wording that would be supported by the intelligence in that report. And, said Lord Hutton, that may have exerted a subconscious influence on the people writing the dossier. So all we need to do is subpoena their dreams, and we'll know. Ladies and gentlemen, where was Dick Cheney this week? He was meeting with Pope John Paul to try and repair relations soured by the war in Iraq, and was asked to work for peace. Isn't that nice? He's the highest-ranking U.S. official to meet the Pope since the invasion in March that the Vatican opposed vehemently. Cheney was on a tour of Europe to ease the tensions. His trip came as doubts grew over U.S. charges that Iraq had WMDs. The Pope called on Cheney, who gave him a gift of a crystal dove and bush, to seek international cooperation to achieve unity, peace, and respect for the dignity of all. He talked alone to Cheney for about 15 minutes. The Vatican said that discussions focused on the Middle East and Iraq. They also talked about family and religious values before Cheney's entourage, including his wife and daughter, was invited into the library. Cheney's trip to Europe was seen as an attempt by the administration to mend fences with European critics of the war. And then he returned to the United States, where he continued a series of appearances that started at the Davos, Switzerland, World Economic Forum, where he's been urging countries to help spread democracy and basically has been taking the hardest possible line, unlike other members of the administration, Condi Rice and Colin Powell, who've, in the wake of the David Kaye statement that, quote, we were all probably wrong, unquote, they've said, yeah, you know, maybe there weren't any WMDs. Dick Cheney is still saying, not so fast. And he's saying it above ground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney.
Confidential.
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 Confidential. It's like I said to Lynn the other night in the secure, undisclosed kitchen. God wouldn't have created fingers if he didn't want us to point them. David Kaye, whose delicate little ego couldn't stand having half his people diverted to a mission he didn't control, at least had the good grace on the way out to point his at the intelligence community. It's regrettable they do a fine job much of the time. They certainly had an enviable record of terminating competitive accounts for us during the Cold War. But operatives don't have to run for re-election. And when the blame comes down on them, most Americans don't even know who they are. So while Dr. K was using his digits as the good Lord intended, I was making a little swing through, you should pardon the expression, Europe. Europe's never been my favorite place. Not near enough hunting. Everything good's been shot centuries ago. But if we ever want a significant number of euros flowing into the Iraq account, somebody's got to do some door-to-dooring. And this secure and disclosed location was overdue for a termite workup. So I was at Vatican City for a photo op with the Holy Father. He's been a critic of our war project, but he's still a powerful moral force in the world. And he's looked up to by preponderance of the nation's Hispanics. Tuesday, January 27th, 10:30 a.m.
And the Holy Father says that the war disturbs him greatly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we understand that, and we appreciate him not trying to prevent Italy from helping us. Tell him I know the answer to the famous question.
What famous question?
How many divisions does a pope have? But here, Your Holiness, let me...
He believes that even at this late date it would profit us all were the United States to walk the path of international cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listen, please tell him we understand he has to say that. It comes with the papal territory. But in all seriousness, my government did want to present the Holy Father with this token of our
Of course, if you couldn't do something about the war, getting rid of Roe versus Wade would be nice.
Really, this is really all I came to do in point of fact. I mean, my daughter's outside waiting for the group photo, so...
But seriously, the Holy Father wishes to emphasize the path of peace.
Well, don't get me wrong, it's a fine path. We all admire it. Please, just have him take this and we can...
I'm sure it's been cleared by security, but...
Yeah.
Just to err on the side of caution, what... I mean, could I...
It's a dove, a crystal dove. Symbolizes doves. There's some good on those doves.
The Holy Father thanks you.
It was nothing. Buy and by the gross. The Pope's a tough old bird. Heck, you don't come out on top in Vatican politics by washing the feet of the most lepers. But I had bigger loaves and fishes to fry back at the secure and disclosed nation's capital. David Kaye's audition for a book deal was making some of the natives inside the secure perimeter restless. And everybody knows I have a great combative effect. So I paid an unscheduled social call to Condoleezza Rice. Thursday, 3:27 p.m.
Mr. Vice President, it's always a pleasure to see you. What a pleasant surprise.
The pleasantries can wait, Dr. Rice. I've been hearing some chatter.
Al-Qaeda?
White House. Rumors of an epidemic following the outbreak of the David Kaye virus. Seems to affect the knees and the spine.
Mr. Vice President, I'm not that kind of doctor. I have a doctorate in international studies from the University of Denver.
Oh, let's cut the kidding, Dr. Rice. There is no University of Denver.
Look it up. Google me.
All right. Enough persiflage. I'm just going to beat around half of my normal complement of bushes here. We're implementing a two-track strategy immediately to wrap up the WMD account. What? You, as befits your more conventionally credible image, are going to do some interviews where you acknowledge possible discrepancies in the intelligence product, pre and post.
I can live with that. Otherwise, we look silly or guilty or something. What's the other track?
I keep doing selected appearances in which I substantially adhere to Attitude 1.0, Operation We're Gonna Find Him.
Dick, you know I've always felt you were a person I could level with.
Mm.
That's not going to work. It sends mixed messages.
Condi, that's Reagan-era thinking. We're not broadcasting. We're in the age of narrowcasting. You'll be talking to your people, the Times, Post, McNeil, Lehrer, NPR crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be communicating with the rest of the country. Neat. Simple. Bifurcated. Multiplexed.
Aren't you forgetting somebody?
Colin? He's tasked with the AIDS account for the duration of Black History Month. He's got a little budget cut to defend. He'll be fine.
Somebody is talking to the entire citizen cohort simultaneously. The president.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be taking a more nuanced approach. Directing a half sentence to each market segment, he'll say he wants to know more facts, and he'll oppose an investigation.
Credible.
There are people who are still prepared to believe that this president wants to know some facts.
No, I mean, is the whole sentence credible?
In the context of the deep reservoir of credibility we've painstakingly built up over the last 3 years, we think this is the least problematic approach.
Well, I have to say I'm relieved, Mr. Vice President. For a few moments, I thought you were going to suggest I take the same line as you, and I have to say, you know, it's not about my professional ego. I'm a team player, as I believe I've proven, but... There are a lot of girls out at the University of Denver who are keeping an eye on me as kind of a role model, and I think they look to me to maintain at least a smidge of intellectual rigor. I mean, if David Kaye couldn't find anything, who can? I mean, what are we going to hire on Hans Blix as a temp through November?
Condi, you've got your integrity for the time being. Don't overuse it.
Mr. Vice President, thank you, I...
Put it in a Ziploc, Dr. Rice. I'll see you in the green room. Funny thing about government folks, when they want something bad, the way Condi lusts after Colin's position, they can be easier to pacify than a baby on brandy. End of partial diary for the end of January 2004. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential. Confidential.
Made it clear I can't be near you. Everybody knows that I'm not a violent man, just someone who knows he's in love. Mistakes, everyone does. Don't know why I did, I guess just because. No one gets through to me the way that you do. Now I know I'm in love. Baby, it's a little much to never touch you when I know I'll never find another love like this. Life goes on, nothing is new. Passing the days, thinking about you. Everybody knows that I'm not a violent man, just someone who knows he's in love.
This is Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, check me if I'm wrong. I try to keep track of the punditocracy as much as I can, given the limits of the human digestive system. And I don't believe anybody who's paid to watch this stuff has gotten it right about what started Howard Dean's plunge toward Glugdom. The first draft of the pundits was he started declining in Iowa when Saddam Hussein was captured. Well, I think one thing we can all agree on, many of us can agree on, a couple of us, is that given the increasing casualty rate of the United States military in Iraq in the period since Saddam Hussein was captured, that would itself say, by definition, that at least the troops aren't safer since its capture. And that was the much criticized statement of Howard Dean, was that he doubted that we were safer. Well, I don't know about me. I know you're not safer flying Air France or British Airways this weekend, but you're also not safer if you're in the American military in Iraq, with or without homemade armor on your Humvee. Others, of course, mark the Scream tape as the source of his troubles. Me, I recall that about 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses, Howard Dean said, if the Democratic Party, if the Democratic National Committee had a real chairman instead of this Terry McAuliffe character, he would, the putative real chairman, would prevent all these other candidates from attacking me the way they've been doing. Now, I'm not, I'm not one of those people who think that the only thing you need to be president of the United States is an overdose of testosterone, but that, ladies and gentlemen, is going a little bit the other way, a little bit in the direction of running to mommy because the schoolyard's rough. And I'm telling you, if you check back there, that's when it started. That's when the whole Howard Dean decline started. So if you're planning to run for political office and mount a movement and raise a lot of money on the internet, don't bitch when the other people attack you. That would be good advice from the good hands people here at Le Show. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it would be time. It would be way past time for a copyrighted feature, The Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
You got to start with this one. It comes from the United Kingdom, where in the wake of the findings of Lord Hutton, the judge who was assigned to find out why David Kelly, the British weapons expert, killed himself last July after he was outed by the British government. Dr. Kelly, was reported by Andrew Gilligan, a BBC correspondent, as having doubts about the weapons of mass destruction claims in the British dossier of September 2002. Are you still with me? The apologies were rampant from the BBC. The Director General of the BBC, Greg Dyke, apologized. That apology was not deemed good enough. He resigned. In the wake of the head of the Board of Governors of the BBC, who had resigned the day before, and his replacement, Mark Byford, apologized again. Just to check to see what he was apologizing about, a BBC interviewer, as they say over there, put it to him.
I must bring calmness, clarity, leadership to the BBC in moving forward.
Can I ask you about the apology issued yesterday by the governors? I want to read it to you. On behalf of the BBC, this is Lord Ryder, on behalf of the BBC, I have no hesitation in apologizing unreservedly for our errors and to the individuals whose reputations were affected by them. What, in your view, is the BBC apologising for there?
For the errors that it made.
Is that the errors it believes it made, or the errors Lord Hutton says it made?
For the errors that it made. Lord Hutton published his findings. We, during the inquiry and subsequently, have said that we made mistakes. We recognise we've got to learn from those mistakes. We've got to implement measures in the future that take account of those mistakes and move forward, but we apologise for them.
So the BBC agrees with all the criticisms of it by Lord Hutton?
The BBC recognises that Lord Hutton has published its findings. The BBC recognises that it has made mistakes, and the BBC has to implement new measures to take it forward.
With respect, for someone who's promising clarity, that's not a clear answer to my question.
Well, it's clear from my perspective that the BBC is unequivocally saying that it apologises for the errors that it made. So it is actually saying that it made errors. It's actually saying that for those errors it is apologising, and it's saying it's going to learn.
So, just to be clear, is it saying it's apologising for everything Lord Hutton says it got wrong? Yes or no?
It's saying it's apologising for the errors that it made.
Well, if I may say so, that's an unclear answer to a very clear question.
I think I've been very clear.
That's the new head of the BBC seeking clarity above all. Dateline New York, a daily news photography contest that encouraged people to shoot sandhill cranes with cameras rather than guns, backfired. Contest winner Danny Quigley admitted that the lone sandhill crane in his photo was stuffed after newspaper editors received an email tip. Hey, Hebert Taylor, the newspaper's editor, called the entry a hoax and apologized to the readers. We presented this photograph as a good example of a living sandhill crane, and we were wrong. He said we apologized to readers for misleading them. Olympia Washington, a state senator, called another legislator an N-word in the woodpile, as we have to say these days, during an argument over a bill prompting some black leaders to demand the senator's resignation while others defended his character. Senator Alex Decchio, Republican of Yakima, used the racist slur against Republican Tom Campbell, Republican of Roy, during a meeting about health insurance reform on Thursday night. Both men are white. His comment was sent shockwaves through Olympia, Washington, where Decchio is generally regarded as a kindly old man. I was absolutely incensed by that racist remark. It's indicative of a black heart and a foul mouth, Campbell said Friday. This is a very serious public problem in my mind. Decchio has apologized to Campbell, the other people in the meeting, and the House of Republican Caucus. The 81-year-old senator says he also plans to personally apologize to all the black members of the legislature, whether they have black hearts or not. Quote, I grew up as an Italian in a very bigoted neighborhood where racial epithets were used against me, and I should know better, Decchio said. I realize a slip of the tongue like this is very hurtful to members of the African-American community, and for that I am truly sorry. U.S. Senator Joseph Lieberman complained to CNN last week after the cable news channel's anchor Bill Hemmer asked the Democratic presidential candidate how he felt about the security fence Israel is building, how he felt as a Jew about it. A source close to the Lieberman campaign said the senator was offended by the questioning of him as a Jew. Hemmer called the Lieberman campaign and apologized, according to a CNN spokeswoman. Senator, is a Jew, do you believe the construction of the security wall in Israel is the right path to peace? Hemmer asked. Lieberman replied, I'm running for president. Bill is an American who happens to be Jewish, so the question I believe is inappropriate. I'm going to give you my answer as an American. A Florida judge who said a rape victim doesn't look like a day at the beach has apologized and taken himself off the case. Sanford Circuit Judge Gene Stevenson said he hopes the woman accepts his apology. He says he doesn't remember making the comment, but court transcripts show he said, why would he want to rape her? She doesn't look like a day at the beach. Stevenson made the remark after looking at a photo of the beaten and bruised victim as attorneys were discussing a plea agreement for the 26-year-old suspect. The woman said she found the comment appalling, and she plans to file a complaint with the state judicial commission. Dateline Ottawa, Canada. A well-known newscaster in the Toronto market was captured making a rude gesture and referring to a Canadian singer as a homo in a series of video clips currently circulating on the internet. The recordings are undated outtakes from promotional items that veteran news anchor Gord Martineau recorded with co-anchor Anne Mruk, I'm not even going to read her name, in the studio to advertise their 6 o'clock evening newscast. The clips show Martineau mocking an upcoming news item about children with cancer and referring to a Canadian singer as a homo. He said, I'm so proud to be part of a news team that has always been instrumental in making a difference and still leads the way in effecting positive change. I ask and hope that you'll judge me based on the work I've been part of for the last 30 years and not on a regrettable incident, he said. And Andrew Gilligan, the BBC reporter, whose offense, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you're in any doubt, because the stories have sort of been overbroad in saying that Lord Hutton slammed the BBC's coverage, the story Andrew Gilligan reported on that fateful morning was that officials, or at least one official, connected with the intelligence operation in Britain, had severe doubts about one of the claims in the British dossier propounding the premise that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That claim was that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction that could be deployed 45 minutes after the order was given. A claim that has later been found to be, of course, as false as David Kaye say all the rest were. Gilligan's problem was that he, at 6:07 in the morning, on the first of several reports he filed for the equivalent to Morning Edition over there, said that the British government probably knew the report was false. And Tony Blair and his spin doctor seized upon that to pick a fight with the BBC and demand an apology. Coincidentally, the BBC's charter is up for review, and Rupert Murdoch, who supports Tony Blair, has had an employee suggest that the BBC be required to sell off any successful programs it develops to private television broadcasters. Like, so say, just pick one out of a hat, Rupert Murdoch. Anyway, Andrew Gilligan, the reporter in question, apologized, resigned, three resignations, one death. David Kelly killed himself, the intelligence official. Three people have resigned. How many deaths in Iraq, U.S. and Iraqi, British and allied? We were all wrong, says David Kay. No resignations. Anyway, Gilligan says, I and everyone else involved here have for the past five months admitted the mistakes were made. We deserve criticism. Some of my story was wrong, as I admitted at the inquiry, and I again apologize. So, ladies and gentlemen, have we failed to connect the dots? Have we connected the wrong dots? Have we connected dots when there weren't any dots?
A farewell tip from Clinton that Bush chose to ignore. A lessening of emphasis when the experts called for more. Some strange young guys in flight school who didn't learn to land. Then tragedy at 400 knots. Next time, we'll connect the dots.
Connect the dots. Connect the dots.
Life gives you clues you can use. Sometimes makes the news. It seems so clear in the land of afterthoughts. We've got to connect the dots. Dick Cheney was the chairman of a firm known far and wide for doing well, rebuilding what the army just destroyed. They got their deals the easy way, no bidding to withstand. Them that has may just be them. The dots.
Connect the dots. Connect the dots.
You take what comes. Knife drops, some comes. Some just might be plums. Are these just neat ideas? Or are they pots? Why don't we connect the dots? Fine tooth comb. Are some still in business? David Kay is going home. It can't really be a quagmire if it's just made out of sand. Things are going great, and are the shots. Go buy some stuff. Don't worry about the dots.
Connect the dots. Connect the dots.
Life gives you clues that you can use. Sometimes makes the news. Some of us in lifeboats, some in yachts. One day soon, we're gonna connect the dots. We'll be right back.
That was Judith Owen. I'm Harry Shearer. The show returns next week at this same time. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show playlists usually available at Harry Shearer, at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the wrong. Excuse me. They weren't all wrong. Of the homeless.